Hello and welcome to Our Dad's Died with me, Rich Spalding. And actually, that's it for this week. It's just me, Rich Spalding. You've only got Rich Spalding. Tom has left. He's left. He's taken the kids. He's taken our dead kids, and he's moved on. No, he's good. He's well. He's off being a very busy journalist, doing big journalism stories, interviewing tech billionaires and nerds from Microsoft. But you've got me. I'm here, and I'm just here to quickly introduce our guest for this week. It's the same guest as last week because we're always delighted to have him. We interviewed Victor Sweeney last week. He was brilliant. And then we asked you to send in your questions for Victor M. Sweeney. Any questions you'd always wanted to ask of a mortician. And we got loads of great ones about bodies, about death itself, about the afterlife, about Victor and his beliefs, about ghosts, about inevitably penises. And so we put those questions to him. We put as many of those questions to him as we could in the time we had. And here are his always insightful, eloquent, and often very funny and gruesome answers. Enjoy the pod. I'll be back in a bit.
So the first one I've got is from someone called AJ, which says to ask Victor if he believes in the afterlife.
Yes. Is that, I you want me to elaborate?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be quick fire. Okay, but that's interesting. So, but is that quite tied into your job then?
Yeah. Okay. So I think a lot of it is because I deal with kind of the physicality of death, right? I deal with the body a lot. Ask any family who deals with this. It's a very abnormal thing to see a body that is not animated, right? It's like a wildly different thing. Like all of a sudden this thing that is mom or dad fundamentally changes. And it's obvious, right? Like it's like, I don't sit there and like check for the pulse when I get somebody. Like one, because someone medical has done that. But like, you can open up the eye and just see there's nothing there. There's nothing there. It's just the strangest thing. And so with that in mind, here's kind of my philosophy on this. There is an afterlife. There are things in this life that we experience that are outside of the tangible, right? Things like love and truth and justice. Like all these things exist outside of us, outside of time. And we experience them from one person to another, right? Like your wife, presumably, loves you, Tom. And like there's the part of you that registers the fact that she loves you is gone when you die. Right? Like that part of you that registered that is gone. And the part that like allowed her to show you love, like not just through her body, but like just through the way she speaks to you and talks to you and looks at you, right? If she were to die, that part inside her that like gives us love, like also disappears, right? And so in my mind, if things like love and truth and justice exist outside of time and space, and there's part of us inside that can recognize these things, then like when our physical body dies, right? Like you get a hug, you're touching, right? That's going to end. Your physical body will die because it's attached to the physical things, right? Like my flesh will eventually decay into dust, right? Everything I've ever touched will eventually break down. But love somehow doesn't do that. And so the part of me that is able to ascertain love and experience love must go to meet it. And so for me, that means like it's God. God is the fullness of love and he exists outside of time and you can't measure him and touch him. And so, yeah, like the part of me that's inside that can like measure and touch these untouchables is the soul. And so, yeah, I believe in the afterlife. Absolutely.
Does what you do as a mortician, does that have any bearing to you on a person's passage, you know, from this realm to the next?
Like in how I treat their body?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think so. I think once the soul leaves a body, that's that. You know, we can kind of, we ought to treat it with respect, right? Like the body is imminently deserving of respect. because everything you've ever experienced has been through your body, right? Every hug you've ever received, body to body. Every like dream you've had, right? Like happens in the confines of your brain. Like bodies are super duper important. They need to be respected. We should cherish them while they're living and while they are dead. But I don't think, you know, my practice of embalming has any bearing on that, let's say.
Fair enough. That's still a lovely sentiment. It sort of has this nice kind of, I don't know, if there is an afterlife, and I guess you're saying that, you know, people don't get to see their own funeral, but to some extent, maybe they do, right?
Maybe you do. Yeah. Maybe there's enough love outpouring that you can still experience it. Well, I guess we'll find out, Tom. You can report back to me and let me know in about 70 years.
From the afterlife. I was just going to say that in that case, what you're doing actually does with Big Baron, because they'll be watching, going, hang on, you treat my body well, Sweeney, because, you know, otherwise when you get to the afterlife, there's going to be a lot of questions.
And if I drop them, my toast, am I done? You know?
Listen, this isn't my view of the afterlife, but I'm just saying it raises questions, and I think you're going to have questions to answer.
So on last week's episode, we sort of talked about the afterlife a little bit, and we kind of talked about ideas of what it might be like.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about what you imagine it to be?
I don't necessarily believe it is something like I get to have a party with all of my friends and we, you know, stand around and we talk to angels or any of that stuff. I think it's more like experiencing all the good emotions and things we've experienced over life, but like experiencing them most fully. So like if I love my wife here, I do it very imperfectly. You can ask her, very imperfectly. But maybe when I die, I will be able to do it more perfectly. Or like all these ties I have on earth to other people, and maybe even things, like they're colored and they are imperfect by my many flaws. But maybe when I die, I will be more perfected and able to do that. That's what I think. I think it's less about like having some kind of physicality in the afterlife and more like soul to soul experiencing things of great beauty and importance.
Last week when we talked about this, I said, yeah, I reckon it's like the lazy river at Walt Disney World. That was the level I was at, and you're coming in with René Descartes level philosophy, and I'm like, oh, it's great having you on. It really
guys, I have a lot of time to think about this. Although now, Tom, you've like put this little time bomb in my head, making me like concern myself. If I don't get these funerals right, I am going to pay for it.
But it sounds like you're doing a pretty solid job so far, I think you're okay.
I'm trying my best. Broadly. Gosh, what else can a person do, you know?
Exactly. You've had two drops in, what, 10 years?
10 years?
That's a good ratio.
Years. Yeah, it's like a drop every 5. That's nothing, you know?
Yeah, that's fine. That's a decent ratio.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, fine.
I should like put that on my resume. Only one drop every 5 years. Hire me for 4.
You're guaranteed Victor anyway. One drop every 5. We had one question, which was, how slimy is the brain?
Really slimy. But surprisingly firm. Surprisingly firm. Like slippery, but kind of firm. And apparently the last brain I saw, there were some soft parts in that one. There was some injury. So that gets kind of weird. It's like, I've never tried it, but I feel like a person could like pull a brain apart with their hands.
Oh, no. I'm glad you've clarified that you've never tried it.
Yeah. I've never tried it. I mean, it's, you know, it's just kind of above my pay grade, but I feel like you could.
Yeah.
It's not super sturdy.
I'm imagining it would be quite similar to if you're making like, bolognese or something with minced meat when you sort of.
Yeah. I bet you it is like that.
Is it a similar consistency to minced meat or firmer?
You know, I could report back to you, you know, just when the occasion arises. But no, I don't usually go digging around in the viscera bag. I mean, I do, because I've got to like puncture all the things to make sure the liquid gets there, but I don't like it. So I don't really enjoy it. My soul leaves my body for a moment and I scoop everything out and cut it up. That's
Again, I think it really speaks well for you that you don't enjoy it. It would be weird if you're like, my favorite bit is puncturing all the organs in the big viscera bag.
Yeah, the look on my face is like this the whole time. It's terrible, yeah. But do what you do. So I can report back to you. I could try to find out.
We'd love it if you could.
Slimy brain consistency, noted.
Have you ever... this is a big... this is a bigger question. This might be too big a question. This might be. I shouldn't be asking this at this stage of the podcast. But for some reason, talking about all the body parts like this kind of got me thinking about like causes of death and how body parts and, you know, like things can be poisoned. But it the way you talk about it is like you go and you collect the body and then you bring it back. I mean, are you... If you saw something odd, or have you ever seen something odd that made you think, actually, that's suspicious. That's not quite right.
Yeah. I had a death some time ago where I actually called the medical examiner after I picked them up. Just because it didn't seem right. And they actually ended up changing the cause of death as a result. So that's kind of cool.
All right.
Yeah.
What was it originally? And
yeah, without and, you can't
so before,
talk about...
let's see. So before it was like natural causes, and then we ended up getting it changed to an accident. So
right.
Yeah.
Are you allowed to say sort of what was the thing that alerted you to that, or is that's maybe too much information?
I probably can't.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't want to
so, something about it which raised suspicions.
Yeah, and it's funny because I mean you're. If you're around a lot of them, like, you know what's normal. And this, like, just wasn't quite right, you know? Like, the body was released to us, and I got it, and was like, this isn't normal. And so I ended up actually, like, cataloging everything and, like, writing out all the details. So then when I called the medical examiner, I had, like, very detailed notes. So there you go.
Was it something to do with... Again, in very broad strokes, was it something to do with the interaction with the person and collecting the body in the initial stage, or was it more to do with what was actually
to
do with the body itself?
Okay, how can I talk about this? So it was initially they thought it was a medical event that led to the death.
Okay.
But then when I got the person back and was like doing intake and like inspecting them and then actually like doing the embalming itself, it turned out there were like more injuries that wouldn't have been caused by this, you know, internal medical event.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So yeah, it's it doesn't happen very often, thankfully. But it's not a bad thing to just have like another set of eyes on there. Like, especially someone who is at the scene and, you know, like is then working very closely with the body rather than like, you know, some doctor who's getting pictures from the sheriff's department or something and just kind of taking a stab at it. So yeah, it doesn't happen too often, but it's good. Mm-hmm. Good to be there.
So this one says, does he believe in the paranormal and has he ever felt scared when doing his job?
Okay.
Oh my God.
I think we had a brief mention on the previous one about sort of spooky incidents.
Yeah, but... I believe in the preternatural. I don't believe in ghosts. And if there were such a thing as ghosts, I don't know why they'd hang around the funeral home. You know, like you think they'd want to like detach or like go to places of importance or maybe like stay with the body. And so like, this is just kind of the halfway house, man. Funeral home, I don't think is a good candidate for hauntings, in my opinion.
And you've never experienced any sort of...
Nope.
No.
No.
Fair enough.
No.
Fair enough. I know. I think that's based on the sort of the tone of the question. I think that's the answer she was hoping for.
Yeah.
Was,
no.
Please don't tell me anything too spooky.
Sorry to disappoint. No.
Next question. In fact, I've got two questions from this person, and they're both quite bodily. Do relatives ever ask for their face to be molded into a smile, and can you do that? Is the first question.
People don't ask me. Okay, so people don't ask me to like put a smile on grandma's face. I usually try to do something that is peaceful. And if I know the person, I know like, you know, what they look like, sometimes like you can achieve that smirk if you're, you know, careful and you take your time. But, no, I wouldn't say people request it, but really the goal is like something like somewhat neutral, peaceful, like you look at it and it doesn't like shock you. That's the goal.
Natural.
Yeah. But yeah, like there are some real goofballs that I've known well that I've buried. And like, if I can get like a little bit of that smirk back, I absolutely will. Yeah.
And how do you achieve that with a dead face?
A lot of it is like, actually, so when we set the mouth and, you know, get the jaw closed and stuff, usually what we'll do is we'll pack a little bit of cotton into the mouth. So like if you're dyed and your cheeks are sunken in, you kind of puff those out. Mm-hmm. And then there's like this little protuberance here that if you can just put a little bit of cotton in there,
just underneath the lips.
And then, yeah. And then once you get the lips in place, you can kind of play with filling the mouth underneath those, you know, muscles that are not moving. But you can kind of fill in little spots to kind of create the illusion of a smirk or a smile.
Interesting. And the second bodily question, which this is how it was worded, and I can't give you any more information than this. Is the rigor mortis erection thing true?
I've never seen it.
Firstly, what is the rigor mortis erection thing? I think I can guess, but...
I mean, so people think, like, you know, when the rest of your body is going hard through rigor mortis, like, you know, you get hard. But I've been doing this for a long time, you guys. I've never seen it. I have seen men will get erections sometimes, like if you're embalming and it just happens to be a lot of pressure going there for some reason, like, and that's not almost never the case. Sometimes you'll get like a little bit of a chub.
Oh, if you're doing a really good job.
Yeah. And then you just turn the pressure down a little bit and it goes away. But no, I've never, yeah, I don't know how that rumor gets started, other than maybe a misunderstanding of rigor mortis, but I've never seen it.
Sounds like a misunderstanding of erections.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, an active brain is terribly important for that. I don't know.
Active blood flow, I think, is pretty critical too.
Yeah. Yes.
Functioning heart seems like quite a key part of the old erection. What do I know?
No, you know, it actually sounds really beautiful when you say it that way, Tom. You need a functioning heart to get an erection.
Oh, yeah. That is nice.
Quite nice, yeah. Isn't it? You could put that on like a Valentine's card next year.
We've got some great merch coming out of this podcast, and this is just the latest slogan. A functioning heart is needed for an erection. I've got one more. It says, this is from Mia, who asks, are there any ways that he's learned to manage his emotional state while working in such a profession? I'm sure it's taxing to an extent. So does he have any advice on how he goes about managing that?
I don't know. So I manage it quite well, I think. I think probably the big part of it is that I have the benefit of getting to work with families closely in addition to with the dead. So like if I just embalmed bodies all day long, I probably wouldn't be quite so well regulated. And it's, yeah, like I said, there's the payoff. And so that makes all the other grim stuff worth doing. And as far as managing your emotions, if you were a mortician, I think it's not something you can teach. I think you've either like got it inside of you before you start, or you don't. And I know morticians who don't. Like there are morticians who struggle with anxiety and depression and whatever, and they get really attached to every family they serve, and they're like so compassionate that they feel all the feelings, and they suffer greatly. And I don't do that. I do both things, and somehow I come out okay. But I don't know if I could teach it.
Do you think it's sort of more of a natural disposition?
I think
there are
so.
Some people who are maybe built for it and some who aren't.
Yeah, I think there is. Because I was talking to my wife about this, about people say like, oh, you must be such an empath, right? And like I am. Like I'm empathetic in a certain way. But mostly, I think it's important to be sympathetic and it's important to be genuine. So like I should be able to care about you and I should feel bad for you. And I should want to help you. But if I was completely empathetic and feeling all of their feelings and like getting so immersed in it myself, I wouldn't actually be able to do my job, right? Like I wouldn't get that bird's eye view because I'd just be way too close to the situation. And you kind of go in and out of that, right? Like there are times when you are like real in the trenches with the family and like you're right there with them. But then you also have to know how to like climb out. And that's just something I think a person has in them or they don't. And I don't know how to teach it.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I think there's a lot of jobs. If you're a doctor as well, presumably you have to have yes. that level of detachment. You need to care, but you can't care entirely about everyone because otherwise it's impossible. You can't function. And just like you were saying there, if you were empathetic, if you felt everything that the family were feeling when they came in. I mean, the last, we were saying at the start, like you want someone to lead you and to, yeah. to have more expertise and sort of say, this is what will help. This is what you should do. Imagine if you brought your dead mum into the funeral home and the mortician burst into tears, you'd be like, well, that's not hugely helpful actually at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and I get a lot of people that talk about that. They say like, oh, I'm really empathetic. I think I'd be great at your job. And I'm like, I don't know. Like you, maybe you would be, but also maybe you would get into it. And after like year two, you would be just so emotionally wrought that you'd have to quit. So it's a balancing act, you know, but that's part of it. And you also don't want to be so detached, right? Like you don't want to show up and then your mortician's yeah. like some kind of used car salesman. You're like, okay, so this is what you should do next. All right. Just follow me. Okay. Like, there is a funeral home, that I've heard of. Okay. I'm not going to tell you where it is. I'm not going to tell you if it's near or if it's far. But like there was a young man that died in his 50s. And his family's mm-hmm. all getting lined up to walk into the church together. And the funeral director's like, all right, everyone, let's have a good funeral today. What? Like, this guy is like little kids. Like, you don't say that. You know?
Jeez, well, so like a football coach, just like, all right, get stuck in from the yeah. off. Everyone Huddle get out up. There. You let's know go. Your roles.
Yeah. No, it's nonsense. You don't want that. You need the person in the middle. You know?
Yeah, 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 yeah. There's a happy medium between those two things, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's not bury him on three, one, two, three, bury him! That is inappropriate.
I have another one, which is, it's short, but I think we can broaden it out. The question is just, what should I do with my brother's ashes? Which I don't know if that's necessarily a question to put to a mortician, but we're going to put it to
you anyway. It is kind of.
As we have been asked to, so.
I have opinions on it.
I'd love to hear your opinions.
So I think, especially with ashes, with cremated remains, I think if we acknowledge the fact that they are indeed bone, and we took one step back, if you had like a box of your dad's bones, it's not likely that you'd be like, you know, first thing I think of when I take these dad, like my dad's bones, I'm going to like shake them out over a lake. Like that probably wouldn't be the first thing that crossed your mind. Right. So I think if we wanted to treat them like what they are, I think it's important. I think it's like every culture, well, not every culture, but like most longstanding cultures had their dead in a place, you know, whether that was walled up in a tomb in the ground, you know, they cremated them and put them in like the big family, whatever. I think there's something about having a place and like, just like how you and I have a place that we are occupying right now, right? Like we have bodies that are occupying right where we are. Every moment of our lives is spent occupying a place. I think there's something to be said about taking those ashes, those cremated remains, and putting them in a place. So I'm not a big fan of like making them into jewelry. I'm not a big fan of like scattering them in really wide places. I think like having them in a particular place is really important. Even if it's a place you can't get to, even if it's like a place you couldn't go to, you know, you like shot them out of a cannon at this mountain and you're like, all right, they're going to land in this place. Like, and I'm not gonna be able to walk there. That's fine. But the fact that they're in like a place and you know where it is, mm-hmm. I think is really important. So that's just my opinion. I think random user who I don't know any of the situation and have no yeah. insights into, I think you should bury those ashes in a place that's important to you.
I think burying the ashes is, I have to say, not one that I've come across or had suggested before.
Yeah.
Thinking about my dad's ashes now, which is still in in an urn.
Yeah.
Maybe part of them have been somewhere else, but we're not.
Who's to say?
Who's to say? But certainly, but the rest are in an urn. And yeah, to bury them.
Yeah.
Here's my misgiving about this problem, about burying the ashes. Here's my problem. If you bury someone's ashes, in practice, we're talking about doing so in your own back garden.
Sure.
For legal reasons. So if you were to do that and you were to move,
mm-hmm.
you now have ashes. I mean, do you dig them up? Do you exhume the ashes and move them to your next location? Or do you leave them? And if you do leave them, do you have some duty to tell the people who have bought your house, just so you know, I did bury my dad there in the garden?
I think that'd be okay. I mean, I guess I wouldn't think it was terribly weird. But then I'm not like a great candidate to suss that one out. But yeah, no, I think burying them is nice. Like, you'd bury, you know, pirates bury treasure. Like, you bury things that are important. And
pirates do bury treasure. I'm liking the idea more and more, because you could put the urn in a chest, which you could bury.
Yeah.
And then when you die, you could leave
a map. You could, like, on the back of your will, you can make a map. I don't know.
Oh,
is this a bad idea, Tom? Is it?
I think this is a great idea.
I'm liking it more and more, but I do feel like you're gonna have. I couldn't leave them, and I guess I have this problem with a lot of things.
What are you gonna do, Tom? What are you gonna do? Like, are you gonna carry them around the rest of your life?
It does feel that way.
Yeah.
At the moment, it does seem like that's what's gonna
happen. And then someday, you will die, and then your children will put your urn next to dad's, and you'll have like this, like you have like this never-ending line of urns. You'll be like, all right, you know, like you're like some guy's gonna go off to college and be like, yeah, I got seven generations with me here, and I don't know what to do with them. I can't put them anywhere.
You have no idea how much I think about that exact problem. I can't. I've almost certainly mentioned it on this podcast before, how concerned I am about that problem. I can't think of a way to deal with these ashes that doesn't result in generations of people burdened with the ashes of the Gherkin clan. I just don't know what the hell to do with them.
Victor's just given you, he's given you the answer.
Yeah.
You put them somewhere that's important to your dad or to you. And then I think when you move house, you leave him there because you want him to be in a place that meant something to him.
Yeah, that was dad's house. Why not?
You can't. I don't like that idea of leaving my dad in the back garden of, you know, these people could be murderers or something. You know, you don't want.
But I mean, your great great grandson could be a murderer, Tom. You don't know.
There we go. Yeah.
This isn't. I don't need to add that to my list of worries, Victor. I forgot about that. Of course, the sheer number of dead people he's going to have on his plate. Oh,
I definitely think if you do say bury your dad's ashes in the family home and then move house, definitely don't tell the people that buying the house from you. By the way, I buried my dad in the garden. Because, I mean, if nothing else, give some context of his ashes. I buried his ashes in the garden.
Oh, yeah, that would be important. Yes.
Yeah. My dad, who died legally and was cremated, we put him in the garden.
Tom almost made, he was going to make that mistake if you didn't say something. I'm glad you did.
Otherwise, you're just walking out and whispering, dad's bones are in the garden. And then disappearing off into the night.
Now, you mentioned that people's bones, if it was bones in a box, you would treat them differently. I agree, if it was bones in a box, you would treat them differently. It's a really interesting point. Are you allowed to get the bones in a sort of treasure chest type situation? Or is that just against the law? You can't just keep someone's
bones? You guys,
bones?
I have put so much thought into this whole thing that I cannot elaborate on it right now. But a lot of places will let you, like, if you request it, to not grind up the cremated remains and just get the bones back. Yeah. Like, if you
grind up the cremated remains, tell me, whoa. So wait, hang on.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I have no idea how cremation works.
Okay.
You're telling
here we go.
Me that,
ready?
Yeah.
Ready?
Just walk us through it.
The quick and dirty cremation. Okay.
Yeah. Yes,
so
please.
Can I use your dad as an example? Just what?
Of course. He was cremated.
Okay. There you go. So dad passed away. They put him in a cremation container some kind of casket. Outer container, goes to crematory. They light up the oven. He goes in. After several hours, several thousand degrees, he's going to be rendered down to just bone. It's like no flesh. The box that he was in, that's gone. Just bone. Okay. And then some of those bones will split and break because it's really damn hot. Mm. And then those remains then are fairly identifiable. And then what they do is they let them cool. They scoop them out. And then they put them in this big metal blender and they grind them up into the consistency of dust. So you're actually this, your ashes here. Hold on. Where are my fingers? Your ashes are pulverized bone dust. So you could conceivably get the cremated bones back before getting them ground into powder.
So when you get ashes, I don't know why I'm pointing at you, like you specifically.
Sometimes when I someone,
do. When you get ashes, the ashes you're getting aren't like, because I always thought it was like the wood almost, and it's the ashes are mostly just the casket and all that. It's actually none of that. It's only the bones.
Uh-huh.
Oh my god, this blows the whole case wide open.
Yeah. That is huge. I assumed it was literally ash, but it's ground up bone dust.
Ground up bones.
I suppose it sounds less romantic, doesn't it?
Yeah. Pulverized bone dust doesn't have the same euphemistic twist that ashes does.
And they don't say it in the it's not ashes to ashes, pulverized bone dust to pulverized bone dust. It doesn't sound as good, does it?
Yeah,
it's
not as romantic. Doesn't trip off the tongue.
Yeah. Where are you going to scatter Dad's pulverized bone dust?
Yeah, but it would make you think. If you thought about it like that, maybe people would be. I don't want to say less flippant. That sounds kind of mean. But there's something about people with when you get to cremation, like creativity runs wild and probably like a little more creative than. Is maybe good? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like people
it's
just
of, it's,
you don't.
It's
you,
a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and like you don't think of the thing in the same way because it's not like you didn't normally experience Dad in the form of a jar. Usually, like you saw him, you know, shirt on, really out. You know, like you didn't see him in a jar very often. I'm just saying.
Of course,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
Oh.
If I'd say my dad had died in Minnesota and you'd been handling the funeral and we'd come to you and said, we want him buried, t-shirt on, Willie out.
I would do it.
You would do
yeah!
it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No. What we'd do, and actually this is what I would do. When you're telling me shirt on, Willie out, I already planned. Okay. Mm. He'd be in the casket. Ratty t-shirt on, Willie out, mm-hmm. and then we just like cover him up to like about the belly button with a blanket, and he still gets his wish. That's what we do.
Nice.
Yeah.
But then when I get there, are you able to just to prove that it is t-shirt on without you can
yeah,
put the blanket down?
If you asked, nice. Yeah. If you were next of kin, you would have every right to ask. And if I knew you and you had gall enough to just give me a t-shirt, I would humor you. Absolutely. Yeah,
it would. It would be inferred that this guy wants to see his dad's dick again.
That's familiar. I recognize that.
Presumably, because you know, in this alternate reality, Rich and your family all live in Minnesota. So presumably, Victor, you know, you'll have known full well that the moment John's body came to you, you would have gone, oh well. Much like the people with a smirk, you'll have gone, this is a man who wants to be buried.
He doesn't need any pants.
Yes. W.O.
And then you just, when you were doing the embalming, you just up the pressure a little bit, give him a little bit of a job. Final. Because you want to be remembered at your best, of course.
There we go. See, it's full circle. It's all of life and death. It's just all for full circle, you guys. It's wonderful, isn't it?
And there we have it. Victor M. Sweeney, mortician extraordinaire, answering your questions. Thank you again to Victor for coming in. Thank you for sending in your questions. There were some really great ones in there. Sorry if we didn't manage to get to yours, but we had kept Victor hostage for quite an inordinate amount of time at that point. Always a delight to talk to Victor. I was sort of not thrilled about how much I talked about my dad's penis listening back. Could have really
toned that down. I remember being surprised in the moment that I was bringing it up so often, and surprised again in the edit. It was too much. It was too much. But look, we've all made mistakes. Grief does funny things to a man. Thank you very much for listening. Exciting to get a new catchphrase this week. We've got a few already, of course. Death comes for us all, but it comes for you first. Bottle it up. That's another good one. It's going to be for our beer brand. And then now we can add to that, you need a functioning heart to get an erection. A sort of Valentine's themed line of merch. I'm thinking red hoodies with a heart stitched into it, and then like a pop-up erection at the very bottom. It's a work in progress. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back in a week's time. We've got some really, really good episodes, some really good guests coming up. As ever, if you want to get in touch, please do. We love hearing from you. Questions for any of our guests, question for us, questions that have sort of popped up when listening to older episodes, get in touch. Get in touch through Gmail. It's always a good one. Ourdadsdiedpod@gmail.com. Or on Twitter or on Instagram, or text us if you have our numbers. Pop round. Scream it loud enough and one of us will probably hear. But in the meantime, have yourself a lovely week. And remember, I've never done this on my own before. I hope I don't mess up right at the very end. Remember that death comes for us all, but it comes for you first. Have a lovely week. Bye-bye.